From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of February, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, and Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Earlier in the day, I participated in the Farm Doc Daily Winter Webinar series. Today we covered crop insurance, ECO, SCO, and how to use the tools that are online. That'll be posted up on the Farm Doc Daily website soon enough, and you'll be able to get to it. But I'll pull a couple of sound bites from there that you'll be interested in hearing from Gary Schnitke as it relates to some of the decisions you'll be making over the next month or so. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $5.41 a bushel. That was up 6.5 cents. The May futures at $5.39 3/4, 7 higher. And December new crop up 4.5 cents at $4.52 1/2. March soybeans at $13.67 1/2. 13.5 cents higher. The May contract at $13.66 3/4, up 14.25, and November at $11.74 1/4, 10 3/4 higher for the new crop. Bean meal up $6.60 at $4.28.90. The bean oil 6 cents lower at $45.63. Wheat futures soft red at $6.33 1/2, down 2 cents. The hard red at $6.11, 3 lower in the lead option contract. Live cattle futures April at $123.12 1/2. 42.5 higher. The feeders at $139.15. They finished 35 cents lower for 100 pounds. And lean hogs at $84.25, up $2.42.5 for this Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. You get much snow?
No, not really. Not yet. We've had a little bit here and there where they're calling to get a little bit more, but we really haven't had much. Oh, couple inches here and there, but it's cold enough that it's still sticking around for sure.
Yesterday in Chicago was a rough day. I take it today's better.
Oh, yeah. Today was significantly better. You know, the corn market actually on the overnight, you know, what came under some fire, you know, and then you came into the day session, basically, with the overnight session closing about a dime off the lows there on corn and almost a quarter off the lows on soybeans. And then you started the day session in a pretty nice market. Corn was actually up double digits for a while, but we ended up closing out the day. I don't have the full settlements yet, but, you know, around a nickel higher as far as front months are concerned. And then, of course, December corn, which we're watching closely this month, settled at 451. Beans settled at about 12.13, you know, on the front months, and then you get out to Nove and settled a dime higher, about 11.73 1/2. So a pretty good market today, especially after what we witnessed yesterday.
What you make of the CONAB numbers as they were released, especially related to second crop corn and total production there?
Yeah, I mean, on corn, a person doesn't know enough about it just yet, in my opinion, to have, you know, 105 million ton crop, or I don't know exactly what the number was, but it was right around that 105 area. But I guess, in my opinion, they're getting that crop in the ground fairly late. You know, they're still having issues getting the first crop soybeans harvested. I know there's some questions as to how many acres, you know, are going to end up getting planted, but CONAB, as well as others, seem to think that the potential yield could offset maybe some reduced acreage. So I think we're setting ourselves up for some issues if we have any sort of weather problems down there whatsoever, especially later in the growing season, which is whenever they kind of get into their dry season.
Just for translation purposes, that's about 4.6 billion bushels. Last year, they raised right at 5 billion bushels. So about 100, 105 million extra bushels, or 115 million extra bushels in this year as compared to last. If it comes to fruition, though, they're just in, as Matt said, in the beginning of that second crop growing season and still have yet to harvest soybeans there. What are your expectations for both corn and soybeans for the rest of the week?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. But as far as corn's concerned and soybeans, we kind of bounced off some support on the overnight markets. I got to think that you're going to see maybe a little more of a consolidation type tone here moving towards the end of the week. I think the next thing people are really looking towards, other than South American weather, of course, is going to be, your baseline numbers next week. So I got to think the USDA is going to come in with some awfully large numbers. I believe at 181 and change is the most we've seen of corn and soybeans combined in the past. Some folks are talking about actually 182 or 3. I think it makes sense to get over 90 safely on corn, but in all honesty, we need to get over 90 on soybeans as well. So those are going to be highly anticipated numbers. Are they the gospel? Not by any means, but they're always something that people take a look at. And I think that in the grand scheme of things, it's going to be the biggest news that we deal with there next week, at least as far as I know.
Yeah, and those are not a regular USDA scheduled report, but rather included in the agricultural outlook that will take place on Thursday and Friday. This one is virtual. It's the first time that's been the case, and it's free. That's also the first time that will be the case. There is a link on our website at willag.org, willag.org. If you'd like to attend the USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum, you can do that for free. It's a webinar series that will take place next Thursday and Friday. Anything else before I let you go as it's related to the marketplace?
No, I just think that, we basically we saw the market find a little bit of support, which is a really good thing. But I think if anything, the last couple of days should tell producers that some risk management is probably a pretty good idea when we're looking at profit margins like we're currently experiencing. So pay close attention, do your math, and make decisions accordingly.
Are you talking about old or new crop or both?
Both, all of the above. Quite frankly, new crop, I know that it's tough for a producer, to sell when there's this huge inverse in the market. I completely understand that. But, if you run 451 corn basis the board and 1173 beans basis the board, if you run those in your spreadsheets with just a typical basis, most of your producers that I know of, for first of all, I know they're more profitable than the last 7 or 8 years, which that's saying something. But most people are going to feel like they've got very comfortable levels of profit margins there.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. This morning, I moderated the FarmDoc Daily Winter Webinar on crop insurance decisions producers and others will need to make by the time we get to the 15th day of March with Gary Schnitke and Bruce Sherrick. I pulled a few sound bites for you to listen to as it relates to crop insurance decisions, ECO in particular. Gary Schnitke went through some examples. He started actually with something we've talked about on this program already, which is the sticker price shot, because the difference between the price of corn and soybeans, for that matter, this year, and the volatility in the marketplace. Here's Gary talking about last year's numbers first, and then how that translates into the decisions for this year and the premium costs.
If we had a 388 and a 15 volatility, our 85%, and we're giving a McLean County example, would cost $1,270. With a 450 and 0.23, that goes up to 2301. So you can see there that that's an increase of $10 for 85%. So last year, a lot of Illinois farmers were getting that 85% in the 15-ish range. Now you're going to be 25-ish range. And that is simply a function of both the projected price and the volatility being higher. And roughly, you can think about 80% of it being because of this. So 80%, and that's a rough number, 80%, 20%.
This being the volatility index, which is set off the last 5 trading days of the month and related to volatility within options.
So if this goes back down to 0.2, 0.19, these price increases will be much more muted. That will also impact SCO and ECO premiums. If you select RP, those are going to go up. At this level, again, you're roughly doubling the SCO and ECO premiums. Same thing for soybeans, 917. We're looking at 1150 now. Again, we will be seeing coverage levels going up. And again, we're setting something at 1150. And last year we were at 917. And our volatilities are going up as well, 0.12 to 0.2. And you'll see that those, again, cause premiums go from 6 to 1248. So we see this 637, almost a doubling of the 85% less, so I guess, percentage. Roughly the same percentage in this example for those cases. In any case, expect roughly a doubling, maybe a little bit less if you're at lower coverage levels of premiums this year versus last year because of projected price and because of volatilities. All right, ECO. Again, now I'm going to go through some examples with ECO. ECO is county coverage. Again, you got two options, 95 to 86, 90 to 86. You can use it with or without SCO. You do not have to take SCO with this. And I think there are certain cases, if you're concerned about premiums, you would take ECO and not SCO. It can be used regardless of commodity title choice.
That means you can be an ARC or PLC and use ECO. SCO, by the way, requires PLC.
It will use county yields, and it's going to use RMA county yields. So the RMA will release their yields. That will be in June of the year following the announcement.
An important note here, crop insurance, as you know, pays out in the fall of the same harvest season. However, because ECO, SCO as well, are based on county-level products, they won't pay out until after the county yields are released. And that's not until June of the following year.
We're pretty sure that none of the SCOs you purchased last year made a payment, but you won't know that. We don't know what SCO payments are for 2020 because we haven't seen the release of the county yields. And again, it's not NASH yields, it's RMA yields, and they will be released in June. And again, the coverage of ECO mimics that of the underlying RP, RP, HPE, and YP product. As you're thinking about ECO and SCO, I would think about it as two policies. You got a county policy on top of a farm policy. And here's what, in particular, if you buy ECO at 90% and SCO at 86 to 80 and RP at 80%, my example here, you really don't have farm level coverage from 90% to zero. You got county coverage from 90 to 80% and you got farm coverage from 80 to 0%. So you could have a farm level yield that's 85% of its APH, but and it won't necessarily trigger a payment because the county didn't. And that's not to say that county coverage isn't good, but it's different. So if you're not getting a 90% guarantee on your farm yields, you're getting a 90% guarantee on county yields, and then below that, 80% down. County coverage is good for general economics. If you're concerned about $3, harvest price, ECO is a good product. It will capture that. But again, it does not provide farm coverage. And it doesn't provide prevent plant payments either. If you lower your RP 85% coverage from 85 to 80%, you're lowering your prevent plant because you're lowering your RP coverage level. So those are two things to keep in mind if your ECO and you're thinking about lowering the RP coverage level because of ECO.
That's University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnicke talking about crop insurance and the decisions producers need to make by the 15th day of March related to both corn and soybeans. I've pulled a few sound bites from the winter webinar that was hosted this morning. You can find an archive of that webinar soon, if not right now, in fact, online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You'll look under the webinar/IFAS tab and then search out the Farm Doc Daily archive, and you'll be able to watch the whole of the Crop Insurance Decisions webinar. In fact, the whole series of winter webinars that the Farm Doc team is hosting now. There's also a way to sign up for those webinars. You can do that at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. On this Thursday, let's check in with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago to discuss what's happening in the world's growing regions. I'd like to start, Mike, with South America, Brazil, in fact, where CONAB this morning updated their numbers for corn. A couple of interesting things that we've already talked about, but acreage is up there for second crop corn, and of course, because of that, even with a smaller first crop harvest, larger harvest in general across the board, at least expected at this point, they're right now trying to put that second crop in the ground. What can you tell me about conditions?
Well, the first thing they need to do is get all of the soybeans out of the ground so they can put all of that corn in. And soybean harvesting is underway in Goiás and Mato Grosso, but it's only starting. You have to remember that a lot of that crop was planted pretty late for their standards, and that's because of the dry weather we had back in October and November. So they're harvesting now. They're starting to plant corn, and they'll get all that corn in with time, but it's going to take a while. We're looking at several weeks to maybe even more than a month until all of that corn is planted. And the thing you need to watch out for would be a sudden end to the rainy season, because right now we're in the rainy season. And that typically continues right through March and then into the first half of April. And in many years, it will continue right into the beginning of May. Then all of a sudden, the rain is over. And just to give you some idea of what we're talking about, in the month of February, in those two states that we're talking about, they average about a foot of rain over the month of February. But in the month of June, they average basically no rain. They can go for 30, 60, even 90 days with no rain. And it's that sharp transition from the wet season now to the rainy season that starts in June that will ultimately determine how the corn crop turns out. And we looked at it in a little bit more detail with some of our proprietary data. And you can easily see that in most years, rains are over with by the middle of May. So that's kind of the time period we're going to need to watch. We need to get the crop in the ground, and then we need to have it pollinated by the middle of May, or we'll have some problems. So that'll be kind of the next shoe to watch for as we move later on into the spring.
In Argentina, the crop has been under questionable conditions. They have improved. I think they may need some rain. Is that correct?
Well, you're correct, because it hasn't rained very much since February 1st. And even though it was pretty wet in the week leading up to February 1st, we still need more rains because soybeans are turning sensitive now, and they'll stay sensitive for about 4 to 5 more weeks. And the way it looks at the moment is like we're going to see some rain over the next 3 to 4 days in some of the eastern soybean areas, but the areas to the west where most are produced are going to miss out on this rain event. It'll actually stay pretty dry in Argentina until we get into later next week. At that point, we should see some rain start to develop, but we're not looking for heavy totals at this point in time. So we'll just keep on watching what's happening in Argentina. It's not a critical situation because of ample rains leading into the week that we're in now. But with the rainfall forecast a little bit iffy, not a ton of rain on the horizon, a La Nina in place, it occasionally does lead to below normal rainfall at this time of the year. We have several things we need to monitor. So we'll just keep on watching it, but it's going to take another week or two before we know if we have anything really to think about.
Here in the United States, a number of things to consider, I suppose. The cold, to begin with, how deep that goes, what kind of logistical issues it might create. And for livestock, as you get through the Southwest, what happens there. And then there's also snow cover as it relates to wheat. And there's a big difference between rainfall and snow amounts as it relates to how much dryness has been relieved. And pick where you want to go with this, but there are just a lot of issues in the U.S. to discuss.
Yeah, there certainly are. And let's start out with cattle, because that's where the number one problem is going to be to get this whole situation started. But basically, if you look at the plains from Nebraska through Kansas into Oklahoma and Texas, and then stretching over into Colorado, that whole area is going to be unusually cold for the next 7 days. In fact, it should average around 40 degrees colder than normal for four consecutive days starting on Saturday. And the really wild thing about that is that we're going to see a snowstorm in the middle of this. Once we get into Saturday night and Sunday, a pretty strong system is going to kick into the plains, and that's going to develop widespread snowfall across all feedlot areas. And temperatures will be hovering right around zero. This is not the type of situation that we normally would see. Typically, you might have temperatures in the 20s and 30s. Then it snows, the system goes away, and everybody's happy again. But in this situation, it's not going to be like that, because if we end up with the 4 to 10 inches of snow that we're expecting across most feedlot areas of the plains, and we throw in some gusty winds, which appear fairly likely, and when temperature is at only 0 degrees, that means that snow is going to be very fluffy and will easily become airborne. We're going to have some problems out there. Once we get into Monday, the snowstorm is over, but temperatures are going to get even colder. We'll see lows in the minus 10s to even the minus 20s in parts of Kansas, Nebraska, and maybe even northeast Colorado early next week. So this is not an ideal situation for cattle or feedlots. And there is another system that's going to kick on out later next week too, but that one will be with a milder air mass, with temperatures more in the 10s and 20s, which actually will feel pretty good considering we're going to be in the minus 10s and minus 20s right before that.
Sounds like there'll be plenty of snow cover for the wheat crop, though.
Well, that's certainly true, and there's not really much of a threat to the wheat crop because of that. All these rounds of intense cold that we've been seeing and we're going to see continue to happen on areas that are snow covered. The only exception to that is in parts of western North Dakota and western South Dakota. But that's a relatively small wheat area. It only includes around 5% of the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop. And so while that area certainly is being affected by a lack of snow cover and temperatures that many times have already reached the minus 10s and minus 20s, and they're going to see more of that, once you get outside of that small area, everybody else is basically similarly cold, but with snowpack, so not too big of a deal.
Is the snow amount enough to relieve the dryness that has been suffered across parts of the middle part of the United States?
We would say no, and the main reason is that even if you get 10 inches of snow, let's say, in parts of the plains, that's only about a half of an inch of water, and maybe even less than that, just given how fluffy it's going to be. And a half inch of water when you're in a drought that's been taking place over the past 6 to 7, maybe even 8 months, it's just not going to do a whole lot. What would change things, though, is if you were to get into the spring, so say a few weeks from now into the middle of March, that's where you can start to get some pretty big rain events. And if the ground is no longer frozen and that water can work its way through, that's how you'll start to improve things. But generally, it's very difficult to break a drought in the winter, just because even a big snowstorm has a relatively low amount of water associated with it, as opposed to a spring or a summer system.
Thanks for keeping track of it. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
Yeah, sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.